Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Right now, the economy's seeing a lot of red. Barack Obama's looking for more green. The president-elect wants to cap carbon emissions, invest in green technologies, and put Americans to work and the economy back on its feet by greening up the country. In a message last week to an international summit in California, he said the U.S. economy would weaken if climate change and dependence on foreign oil are not addressed, and stressed that change is coming.
My presidency will mark a new chapter in America's leadership on climate change that will strengthen our security and create millions of new jobs in the process.
But the Green New Deal, as some now call it, was an easier sell when oil topped $150 a barrel and gas was $4 a gallon. Do the numbers still add up with oil nearer 50 and the world economy in crisis? This hour on Point, can a Green New Deal restart the economy and save the planet, save our bacon? You can join the conversation. Is this the moment to go full throttle green or not? Are you ready for a Green New Deal? Joining me now from New York is John Kerry, senior correspondent for Businessweek magazine. He covers science, technology, and the environment and writes the Green Business blog. John Kerry, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Tom.
Great to have you. Barack Obama never stops talking about the green economy one way or another, right up until yesterday. But what does it mean that oil is back at, what, 50-some dollars a barrel now, having been at 150? Do the numbers still add up? Or is spending a ton on, you know, green economy investments exactly what the sort of New Deal, Keynesian, impulse would mean right now?
Well, I think you can argue on both sides of this right now. The conventional wisdom, of course, is that with oil prices down and with the economy in a tank, the last thing we want to do is increase the price of using fossil fuels, which one would have to do in any kind of climate policy. But Obama is surprising a lot of people by that speech that you quoted, where he says, no, climate is really the centerpiece of this because it wraps in all these things together, dependence on foreign oil, creating new jobs with green technologies. And he argues the time is right now to do it, because this is the time when we can actually spend a lot of money, given that the economy needs a stimulus and all these things need to be done, so let's do it now.
Let's listen to a little more Barack Obama. This is from his weekly radio address very recently. President-elect saying the current economic crisis comes with some opportunity, including green opportunities.
We'll put people back to work rebuilding our crumbling roads and bridges, modernizing schools that are failing our children, and building wind farms and solar panels, fuel-efficient cars, and the alternative energy technologies that can free us from our dependence on foreign oil and keep our economy competitive in the years ahead.
Wind farms, solar panels, fuel-efficient cars, alternative energy, all the buzzwords are there. We're going to hear in this hour from a venture capital guy who's very green, from an economist who has some questions. But Josh, what are the major elements, as we know them now, of Obama's green agenda as it intersects with this economic challenge we're facing?
Well, Obama still insists the centerpiece is some sort of action on climate. He talks about putting targets of up to 80% reduction by 2050.
That's
but he's also
in carbon
talking
emissions.
About a large amount of money. The number he's been using since the campaign is $15 billion a year that will go into all sorts of green technologies and renewable energy efficiency. Meanwhile, there are a whole number of groups, including the Center for American Progress, which is closely linked with the Obama administration, that has put out very detailed plans of what that money could be used for, everything from retrofitting federal buildings, which could put a lot of money to work very quickly and create a lot of jobs, building green schools, putting in renewable standards so there has to be more electricity that generated by renewable sources, which would generate a lot more growth in things in like wind and solar. And so there's a whole list of things that could be done quite quickly with quite a bit of money that would, in fact, put a big stimulus into the economy.
$15 billion a year seemed like a lot of money not so long ago. Now it's dwarfed by these hundreds of billions of dollars that are going into a stimulus. Could it grow? Are we talking about some kind of massive national construction project on wind, on solar farms, on a new electrical grid, which everybody says is necessary to move to alternative energy?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more money available than there was before. You know, I've been talking to these people that have been pushing the idea of green recovery for some time, and when the idea came up in Congress in hearings in September, they were sort of told, keep the numbers down, maybe $150 billion is the most we can ask for in this climate. And by the time the economy began to go in the tank, and it was clear that the problem was greater than anyone thought, by the time they came and testified in Congress a couple months later, they were saying at least $300 billion and maybe more. And so, you know, there is this willingness to spend a lot of money, and so the numbers could go quite large.
John, we're going to look at a lot of elements of this hour, and we're very glad you're with us from Business Week in New York. I want to bring another voice into this conversation right now from Menlo Park, California. We're joined by Josh Green, venture capitalist. He's a general partner with Moore David Dow Ventures, 25-year-old Silicon Valley firm with $2 billion under management. He helps lead Moore David Dow's Powering the Planet portfolio, which focuses on what is the buzzword these days is clean tech. Josh Green, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me on.
So, give us your assessment of where we stand here. On the one hand, Barack Obama is talking very big about green. People are calling it a Green New Deal. On the other hand, oil was 150 and now it's 50-something. At one level, we're broke. So is this a good time or a bad time to go green, Josh?
Well, we still strongly believe that it's a very good time to go green. We have actually modeled our venture capital practice in green technology, which started in 2003, based on an assumption of $40 oil. We feel that basically an economic proposition for green technologies has got to be sustainable above that number. And if you look at real oil prices over the last 35 years, oil has actually averaged $43 a barrel. So we think there's an economic proposition for green technologies that definitely exists. In terms of the economy and where that's at, we think that not only does it provide a short-term stimulus in the form of jobs, for example, laying 20,000 miles of transmission grid across the United States would provide a tremendous number of jobs, but long-term, we think it's the key to keeping the U.S. competitive in the world market.
But is there the money to do it? All we hear about is credit crunch, how everything's drying up. You're in the private capital world. Is it going to take public money to make this happen, or is it a straight-up attractive business proposition even now, Josh?
Well, fundamentally, it's got to be a straight-up attractive business proposition. In fact, Merrill Lynch just issued a report this morning saying that the long-term prospects for clean tech technologies in the private sector, they're very bullish on that, and they're very positive on it. We think that it's got to sustain itself on that basis. Having said that, we think that their public monies can be used and should be used advantageously as a catalyst to get these various industries going. And those dollars, we think, are available, especially if tied to an economic stimulus package that provides short-term jobs and a boost to the economy. So it's a twofer for the government.
John Kerry, in New York, we're reading, and you must have seen in the New York Times this morning, Elizabeth Rosenthal's piece, Economic Slump May Limit Moves on Clean Energy. Countries and companies around the world pulling back because, you know, one of the few saving graces of this giant economic downturn is that energy's become less expensive, and people are often afraid or reluctant now to put the money into things that may drive up the cost of energy again. What about it, John?
That's a real problem. I mean, this is sort of an echo of what happened in the 80s when oil prices dropped and all the promising things in renewable technologies withered and died on the vine as a result. And so in some way that argues for maintaining focus on this so that doesn't happen again, so that we're not even in more trouble down the road when oil prices inevitably go back up again and we're stuck without the renewable and energy-efficient technologies that would have made a really big difference. One of the arguments for doing something now also is a lot of things that can be done save money. You can retrofit houses, weatherize buildings, reduce the energy use in a wide variety of sectors, which has a pretty quick payback, so that both creates jobs, it reduces energy, and then it reduces you know, the amount of money that's perhaps going for imported oil, which also improves the national security. So that's why Obama's talking about wrapping all these things together and saying it needs to be done now, because the long-term future depends on it.
When he talks about a couple of million jobs over the next few years from his stimulus program, how much of that? Is it clear, John? Does Barack Obama see as coming from a green push?
The numbers are very difficult to get a hold of, and I'm not sure I believe them all, but the people are talking about if you spend, say, $100 billion on sort of green technologies, it will create 3 million jobs. Who knows if that will happen? And I think your other guest later, Matthew Kahn, may cast some doubt upon some of those figures. But it is clear that that the money will create a certain number of jobs, and a lot of these jobs will be at home. The problem with, you know, just handing people money to spend is a lot of that goes for imports or for imported energy, and so it's better to put the money into these kinds of things, which, as a lot of people, and I think Obama himself says, a lot of these jobs can't be outsourced, except for the problem that because the U.S. has been a bit behind in a lot of these technologies, we're going to have to be buying a lot of solar panels and winds, turbines from the Chinese and from the Europeans. And so that's another argument for a stimulus now, is that it will help America catch up and maybe even innovate its way out of this problem and become a world leader in these technologies.
Try to build an industry here in a downtime. Josh, does it give you pause that T. Boone Pickens has put his wind farm on hold?
Not really. He is fundamentally caught up in the financing environments and the credit crunch that everybody else is. And it's our feeling that T. Boone Pickens has not lost his resolve towards moving towards a wind-based energy economy in the Midwest, but he is caught up in the credit situation as well, and you know, we got to recognize that reality does exist. The New York Times article this morning, by the way, mentioned a lot about canceled projects and stuff around the world. I don't think that article made it clear enough, however, that is a direct result of these credit crunch issues.
Josh, stand by. We'll hear more. Josh Green, John Kerry, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the green economy, a Green New Deal, people are calling it, and what the age of Obama can actually deliver in the face of economic meltdown and plunging oil prices. Maybe what role green investment may play in pulling us out of the meltdown. John Kerry with Businessweek magazine has joined us from New York and from Menlo Park, California, venture capital gulch out there. We're joined by venture capitalist Josh Green. He's a general partner at Moore Davidow Ventures, very active in clean tech investment. Let's get the voice of the people in here from Timberville, Virginia. Bob, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you know, Bob?
I've been in the automobile industry for a while, the repair industry side of it, and I have noticed a lot of people want to purchase hybrids, want to purchase electric cars, but actually the cost effectiveness of that versus a standard little four-cylinder car is beyond their reach right now. And I was wondering, I had two questions. One, if we approach this green economy, are we going to hurt the people who are on the lower end of the income by mandating they have to buy these cars? And two, does this same type of thing ring true with the initial purchase cost of installing, say, solar panels or wind turbines on your house to conserve electricity, when your electricity bill may only be $100 a month?
Bob, those are great questions. Let me hold those right here in my hand and get a few more callers on the air, then we'll take them right up. But thank you for calling. Patrick in Nashville, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
My point is that I think we're really at sort of a turning point for American business. They have to decide if they're going to continue their short-term thinking, quarter by quarter. You know, American business boards typically run their numbers quarter by quarter.
Right.
And we need to start thinking long-term as a country. And I think that's where, you know, the new president's wanting to take us, is a longer-term thinking, 10-year strategy as opposed to a quarter-by-quarter strategy.
What about when they're just trying to survive, Patrick, day-to-day, let alone quarter-to-quarter?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, if you look at what's going on with gas prices, it's probably going to be one of the big savers for, you know, this next 6-month period as far as consumer spending goes. And getting the gas price off of $4.50 down to $1.50 is going to help the overall economy and spread that spendability, if you will, of our capital out. So I think American business really is at a gut check point where they're going to have to decide, do we want to play long term here or do we want to continue to play short term?
So do it now, you say. Time for a gut check. And one more from Somerville, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I thought Barack Obama really made an important point here because he said that we have to go from this pattern of shock versus trance where sometimes oil is too high so we do anything and then it's too low so we don't do anything because the payback is all wrong. And I think that, as some of the callers have said, this is an investment that creates jobs, keeps people warm, improves housing values, puts money back in people's pockets, and lowers climate impact. And I've noticed that there are events like all around the country bubbling up where people are pointing to this. There's one at Faneuil Hall tonight talking about energy empowerment. And I have a question for your experts, which
yes,
is there's a huge amount of talk about this infrastructure investment, and I'm hoping that infrastructure investment doesn't just mean roads and jobs and bridges, even though we need that, but also really will affect residences who need those extra dollars to do those retrofits that will pay a lasting dividend to regular American families who may not have the extra dollars to put into it right now.
So where's that infrastructure investment going to go? All right, we've got a lot on the table. Josh Green and John Kerry standing by. Let me welcome into our conversation from Los Angeles economist Matthew Kahn. He's a professor of economics at UCLA. Matthew Kahn, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. You know what's on the table. You hear the large interest from our callers, and here's John following it all the time, and Josh Green, way into it with private investment. Do you see a Green New Deal, first of all, just broad question, as an effective engine for pulling our country's economy out of the giant slump it's in?
There's certainly productive steps President-elect Obama can take. The skeptic in me wonders if a Green New Deal could add up to numerous Newmans from Seinfeld of sort of an enormous green post office. A question
mean,
that
boondoggles, you mean, or what?
I hope that I'm wrong, but I hope that we have an accountability system. I moved to Los Angeles from Boston, and the Boston Big Dig, with its ex post $16 billion price tag relative to what it was supposed to cost at the start, makes me wonder. I want President Obama to deliver on this agenda, but of cost effectiveness here.
And speak to our caller from Virginia, Bob, who says, will this hurt low-income Americans if we get serious about it? And what about on the infrastructure front? Is it, is it worth the coin? Everybody knows we need the climate change turnaround, but does it hurt those at the bottom? Is it cost-effective to do this, or is it simply not?
I do believe, as my colleague Jared Diamond at UCLA has emphasized, that with China and India developing, the long-term prospects for gasoline prices and for fossil fuel prices in general will go up. And so steps we can take to green our economy will be cost-effective in the long run. I'm sure that President Obama will recognize that that lower-income households, if they face higher electricity prices, there would be incentive schemes to rebate money back to keep their purchasing power from falling.
Josh Green, how do you look at this as a private investor, a venture capitalist? Do you see this as a big jobs program that may help a lot of people, low income and otherwise, by getting them back to work? Or do you see it just as a potential gold mine for fat cat investors who plow their money into your funds?
Well, actually, we don't have that many fat cat investors. At least I checked their weight recently. I don't think they're that fat. But
they're not skinny on the money side if they're with you.
No, but we actually are funded by university endowments and pension funds. Those are actually the investors in our funds. I agree with Matthew that the long-term impact on oil prices is going to be definitely an upward trend based on demand from China and from India. In terms of the jobs element to this, I definitely applaud that. I think that's a wonderful and important part of getting our economy back on track. But as a venture capitalist, looking at purely from the idea of investing in companies and then getting a return on our investment,
mm-hmm.
we see these opportunities as holding tremendous promise for many, many years to come, if not decades to come. And in our business, we look at returns as happening within a 5 to 7 year period after making the investment. And we think there are tremendous opportunities out there within the technologies themselves for creating innovation that will in turn create lots and lots of jobs. A good example is a company we invested in called NanoSolar, which is a thin film solar company in San Jose. It'll have the lowest cost solar that anyone will be able to provide in the world, and actually will create lots and lots of U.S. jobs where those solar panels are currently imported from China.
So you're talking about lots of jobs actually building very thin solar panels or film, Josh?
That's correct. It's a printing process that prints the solar cell onto the panel itself. It's much more efficient and lower cost, and as a result, will create lots of jobs. They just opened a several hundred thousand square foot facility in South San Jose right here in Silicon Valley.
Now let's think about how these pieces fit together. Is that a winner for you as an investor with the current power grid around this country, or do you need that giant federal investment in a new national grid, the sort of equivalent of the interstate highway kind of investment, but for moving power?
No, we don't. We will not need any government investment in NanoSolar. Another company that's a good example of this, who's already out there selling large amounts of panels, is a company called First Solar down in Phoenix. Unfortunately, because of the policies that exist in the United States, they have sold almost all of their panels to Europe and specifically to Germany. Now, having said that, they don't need investment from the U.S., but they do need a change in policies where there would be more tax-effective policies to allow the purchase of those panels by U.S. companies and U.S. citizens and to create a U.S. market for that. And then the final point I'd make on solar is that solar is rapidly dropping in price per watt. And we think that within the next 5 years, it's going to become a grid parity situation where the generation of a watt of power from solar panels will be the equivalent to doing it from coal, which would make the decision quite easy to move to solar.
Matthew Kahn, you said you're worried about boondoggles if we start channeling billions and billions into a green push here. But everybody has said we're going to need a new power grid. That sounds like not just a winner but a necessity. Isn't there plenty of room for investment there without getting into boondoggle land, or how do you weigh that?
Tom, I hope you're right. To pick up on one point that Josh just made, a key issue here is learning by doing. So as the Toyota Prius, as they gained experience making the Prius, did the quality of that car improve? Because that would encourage consumers to go green in the case that Josh was just outlining for solar. Mm-hmm. As solar producers gain experience, perhaps selling due to government mandates, will they get much more lean and mean and cost effective? Those of us who are green environmentalists need to believe that there'll be sharp learning by doing. With respect to this this grid, a key issue that economists are talking about is information. Of are consumers out there aware of their current electricity bills, both in commercial and residential, the people who live and work in these buildings? And if there was a smarter grid telling them about their electricity consumption over the day, would they change their behavior and reduce their electricity consumption and on net reduce our greenhouse gas emissions?
John Kerry, how about it? This idea of rebuilding the national power grid, a smart grid, Obama's team has talked about for a long time. I mean, that sounds like something that could put an awful lot of people to work for a long time. Do you see it coming? Does it fit into the numbers?
Well, it has to come because, you know, we've had this big dumb grid that causes blackouts periodically still, and everyone agrees that the changes need to be made and that investments need to be made. But I want to make something quite clear. A lot of what we're talking about here isn't necessarily federal dollars directly investing in things, but setting up the market forces through tax incentives and other policies that would stimulate private sector investment in these things. And a good example is the smart grid. And energy efficiency in general, where if utilities are allowed to, say, put the cost of those investments in the rate base, then they would be as inclined to put their money into these kinds of things, which can reduce energy cost, as they would in putting them in a new power plant, which they would need if they weren't able to reduce energy this other way. And so we're talking about a lot of changes in policies that would then stimulate and make possible these investments in the smart grid or in energy efficiency in all these homes and buildings that will make more of a difference than building a new power plant.
John, you said early on that a necessary element of a green push is for the cost of fossil fuels to be increased. Now, a lot of Americans right now, again, to our caller's point, are celebrating cheaper gas at the pump. That's putting real money back in the family budget. One way or another, whether the gas pump or energy that comes down the line, is it going to have to be bumped up somehow to create the headroom for this Green New Deal? And will that be politically palatable, John? Are we talking cap and trade? Where does that increase in fossil fuel cost have to come?
Well, it is very politically difficult. But if you talk to a number of CEOs, especially in the utility sector, they'll say that the single most important policy we can do now is the kind of climate bill that would put a cap and trade or a tax or some sort of increase in price on carbon, because they're looking forward to the future and trying to decide what to invest in. Do they invest in coal plants or nuclear plants or whatever? And the economics of all those are going to change dramatically on what the future price of carbon will be. And so they need to know what those ground rules are. And they all see it as inevitable that there will have to be some sort of additional price on carbon because of climate change. And also they see, as we've been talking earlier, that the price of fossil fuels are inevitably going to go up as well. And so, one of the arguments that has been put out is the idea of putting a floor, some sort of floor on the price of energy so that it won't be allowed to drop so much and then kill a lot of the innovation that might be going on because of the high price.
On what kind of energy? On gasoline at the pump or on the price of energy for heating homes and keeping the lights on? Where and how?
Well, the simplest would be on a barrel of oil, and which would affect gasoline and home heating oil and that sort of thing as well. You know, it's interesting that we've seen that these prices in energy drop at the gas pump and a barrel of oil, but electricity prices keeps going up, which is helping, as Josh talking earlier, to make solar more cost effective. And so, what the nation really needs is a plan moving forward that gives some sort of certainty so that it becomes easier for the private sector to make these investments. And also, it's important from a sort of a global standpoint, sort of restoring America's place in the pantheon of nations that are trying to tackle these global problems.
Barack Obama says he'll do it. Yes, Matthew.
And just to add on, I hope that this is a bipartisan issue. If businesses feel that a future Republican administration, perhaps in 2016, would flip these policies, would business delay decisions now versus would they make permanent green investments now if they anticipate that the Congress is bipartisan on this issue?
Let's get a quick call from Middletown, Connecticut. Jerome, you're on the air. We just got a minute, Jerome. What do you say?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know, Jerome?
I would just like to say that I think the green technology is here now, and to remobilize the country, to get people back to work would be great. And just an idea that I've had is these people in Michigan, many places in Michigan where jobs have been exported, and we have these huge manufacturing facilities. Maybe it's time now that the U.S. starts remanufacturing wind turbine blades and solar panels so that when we come out of this big recession, we can export that technology to China and India, into these countries where they're very hungry for energy. And it's going to, get these people back to work, and it's going to kind of keep us from not building more huge warehouses and all these things. We have, the workforce here now. And we really, I think, as a country, to get out of the recession, need to start manufacturing something again.
We've got a workforce, and they need jobs. Josh Green, do you see it? Can this turn around America's industrial fortunes, or is that pie in the sky?
No, I think actually the caller is right on in his comments. There actually is a story that I read recently about an old Maytag factory in Iowa that the Maytag business left the town high and dry and the rest, and they attracted a wind turbine manufacturer, exactly the point he was making,
mm-hmm.
to make blades in that town. That town couldn't be happier to the day, and as one of the workers was quoted saying that I feel a lot better doing wind turbine blades than I do making washing machines.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the green economy, the Green New Deal people are talking about, and what the age of Obama can deliver on this front in the face of economic meltdown and plunging oil prices. We've been joined by Josh Green with More David Isle Ventures, venture capital firm out of Menlo Park, California. Matthew Kahn is with us, professor of economics at UCLA and author of Green Cities, Urban Growth and the Environment. John Kerry is here from Business Week magazine. He writes the Green Business blog there. Here's Obama again from November 18th. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a big climate summit. Obama said America's ready to listen and lead.
When I am president, any governor who's willing to promote clean energy will have a partner in the White House. Any company that's willing to invest in clean energy will have an ally in Washington. And any nation that's willing to join the cause of combating climate change will have an ally in the United States of America.
President-elect Barack Obama. Let's go to Whit in Nashville, Tennessee. Whit, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I'm calling from South, obviously. This is a place where we're really on our second round of the bottom fallout of the job market. First one being in textiles in the middle of the century. So those jobs all went overseas. It's like a previous caller stated. We need to be turning to a green economy to get people back in these derelict factories and actually producing something, taking us back to the industrial capitalism of our past. Obviously, it's a financial capitalism that has ruled the day for the past few years, and you know, we see where that's gotten us. We've got to get back to actually making something, and in the name of sustainability, growing our own food as well, reducing transport costs, you know, for food and goods and stuff like that. I mean,
and Whit, do you believe that the green economy would actually do it? Do you believe it would deliver?
I believe so. I mean, I think we just need to think just generally in the terms of sustainability and what it means for a system to be sustainable. That's kind of a buzzword nowadays that we associate with green technology. When we talk about sustainability, we also need to be talking about a sustainable foreign policy, sustainable health care.
And an economic sustainability. Whit, thank you very much for that. Matthew Kahn, keep your reality check in here. I mean, the need is so great. People's desire to rebuild an economy with decent wages and bring those factories, towns back in Michigan or in the South, as Whit says, is so strong. How much do you think we can hook to this green push? I mean, is it big enough, vast enough, that it can really be the heart of a kind of a new economic renaissance, or is that asking too much?
Unfortunately, I think it is asking too much. That California offers one example. California it has a more temperate climate than the rest of the U.S., and so always had lower electricity consumption. But starting in the early 1970s, California made a big conservation push, and now California uses half as much electricity as the rest of the country.
Okay.
But my point is that this push, I do not believe, created an enormous green sector for California. It became much more energy efficient, but at least in California, didn't deliver on these jobs.
Josh, what's your assessment? Enough here for America to hook a century of new economic growth on, or at least some decades to get into this century? Or is that putting too much hope in green tech, clean tech, green economy?
Well, Tom, I like to actually say that the dirty little secret about clean tech is that it is actually the very boring process of revamping our industrial processes, of actually making them more efficient and more competitive so that we can retain our leadership in the world over this next century. So if you think that's a small idea, so be it, but I actually think that's a pretty big idea in terms of being able to handle very many, many aspects of our economy.
Let's go to Frank in Plaistow, New Hampshire. Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Thank you.
My point is to follow up on the point of one of your speakers, mm-hmm. who said that he was concerned about responsibility and accountability. I believe that it's necessary to invest substantially in new alternative energy technologies, for example, batteries and fuel cells, to achieve greater energy efficiency. But I've been in the alternative energy business for 32 years, And I can tell you that the investments that have been made in the past have not had the kind of accountability. There's been an enormous cynicism in some of the companies, some of the large companies that have been funded to do this research, and they have simply used it to rotate unemployed engineers through the programs.
So the boondoggle threat is a big one to you, but how do we clamp down on that, Frank? How do we keep from going down, from wasting that time?
That's my second point. What is necessary is to have people in the funding agency, such as particularly the Department of Energy, who are knowledgeable and have good judgment about what will work, and then are capable of following the programs very, very closely to see that the money's being well spent. So that means hiring a few more people, which is not a bad thing.
Frank, let us pick that up.
Matthew. Tom, can I kick in?
Yeah.
So the XPRIZE Foundation has competitions and tournaments where they only, as I understand it, they only deliver the money if the inventors deliver on the deliverable, a cure for cancer, a hydrogen car. Mm-hmm. That would be one way to set up the incentives right in this green race.
But that's not really the kind of front-loading Keynesian impulse that seems to be at work right now. It's not
that's
wait for the
I
result.
Like it.
Yes, but what does it do for kickstarting the economy if you make people sort of do it on their own and wait until they actually deliver? I understand the appeal of it, but does it gun the engine?
So we seem to be trying to achieve three goals at once here: to end a recession, to mitigate climate change, and to increase energy independence. And so Tom, I take your point about the compatibility of these goals, but I also question whether government can pick winners of what is an industry. Government does not have a great track record on picking green winners.
John Kerry, what about the infrastructure of government to actually execute and oversee a push of many, many billions here? Is it there? Is it dismantled after the George W. Bush years? How do you see it?
Well, I think thinking that the government has to lead on this is probably the wrong approach. I mean, clearly there are people that are funneling R&D money to things, and you need good people there, and some of that has been reduced over time. But to me, the most important thing is that the way to do most of this is through the judicious application of market forces. I mean, we have an example right in front of us. Germany, which isn't exactly a sunny country, has become the world leader in solar energy simply because it put in a policy where anyone that generated renewable energy would get a premium for that energy that they produced. And so now Germany was sucking up half the solar panels produced in the world. Josh talked about nano solar, all its panels going overseas. A simple incentive like that, provide the money if you build it, and the people will come. And we're seeing this explosion of response in response to incentives like that. And that's the kind of thing where the money could be spent much more judiciously, and it wouldn't pick winners and losers, because the technology that could meet these targets would be the ones that would flower under those incentives.
But John, Barack Obama is talking about spending billions, many billions on this front, not just incentivizing, but actually putting federal money out there. I mean, there's no reason we can't walk and chew gum, I guess.
The tax incentives would, in fact, be spending money. I mean, we have a tax credit, say, for biofuels, which costs a number of billion dollars a year. These tax credits for solar installations cost the government large amounts of money. So this is another way of spending money, through tax breaks, tax incentives, tax credits, and that kind of thing, that that in some ways harness market forces rather than trying to direct them, which is usually a mistake.
Let's go to Sam in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Great, great show. And my point is, I'd like to challenge the guests. I was just counting how many times I heard the word money mentioned, to stop using the word money. I mean, I've completely lost faith in corporations to solve this problem. We've watched Detroit since the 1970s not come up with fuel-efficient cars. This problem can't be solved by money and people who are involved with money. It's just the wrong lens to be looking through this. And I would suggest a better lens to look through is human energy and human capital. We've got tons of human energy on the planet and tons of human capital. Money's not working anymore. I mean, look at this this bank debacle. These are guys who are experts at making money, and they've botched the whole thing up. So I'd like to see a whole paradigm shift. Let's see if we can stop talking about money and start talking about people.
That'll be a big challenge. I mean, to many people, human energy and human capital equal the economy, and the economy equals money. But Josh Green, you hear the skepticism right there about market forces, the kind of mantra of many years now. And here we sit in this deep hole, people very skeptical about private investment's capacity to get this done. How do you see the balance of initiative here, Josh?
I have tremendous respect for the caller's comments, but I also respectfully disagree with them. I think that market forces are the greatest motivator still in a capitalist society, in a capitalist, generally capitalist world that we live in. And that being the case, we look at the incentives to actually create new industries that will make folks money as being the thing that will be the great initiator of lots and lots of change. In our particular situation, we look, and there was a prior caller that talked about individuals cycled into jobs and that big companies don't really do anything with their programs.
Mm.
We agree with that. We see that time and time again. Most of these programs are done by large corporations for PR value, and I'm extremely skeptical of, for example, oil companies looking at alternative fuel investments. But where we look at things is a good example is a company I've invested in down in San Diego, which is turning the chemical industry into using biomass rather than non-food biomass into commodity chemicals. And in order to convince the big chemical companies that they need to make the change, we feel that they have to be 30% or better, lower cost, in order to do so. And we think when it's 30% or better, that those companies will actually have a natural incentive to make that switch.
Matthew Kahn, look at this as an economist. Our caller says, please take money out of the equation. I've lost confidence in it. Josh Green is all about putting private investment to work. But are we going to need some new balance? Is Green New Deal the right word here? It's hard to pick winners, but market alone, well, I mean, we see, well, of course, what's market alone? But the big three are sure in deep trouble.
So I wanted to pick up on that and echo some of Josh's points. If I could sit down with the Detroit executives, I'd want to ask them, why did they make the bets that they did on the Hummer? They must have had an expectation of long-run $1 gas. And so a key question that Tom Friedman talks about in his book, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, is if business expects that we live in a credible world where carbon will be priced, as John was saying, and there will be incentives to go green, then these businesses, the objectives of business and environmentalists will be aligned, as these businesses will expect green consumers and build products for them.
But that requires government intervention to set that bottom line energy price, to set a floor is what you're describing, as I hear you there.
Or as John was saying, this carbon tax. And so, yes, free market environmentalists have to scratch their We do need the government to step in, and President Obama has made it clear that he will. I wonder if future Republicans will continue his policies, and I hope so.
Let's go to Aiken, South Carolina, and Colin. Colin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Tom, I wanted to point out that we use two terms interchangeably, and I think it just confuses the issue, and the terms are price and cost. There's a price. If the price of a barrel of oil is $50, the cost of that barrel of oil may actually be $100 or $150. And what we're talking about this morning when we're talking about retooling the industrial sector or the manufacturing sector, that's an economic benefit while we're sending money overseas for cheap oil or relatively cheap oil. That's an economic loss. So that represents an economic cost.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of other factors that go into this. So when people are talking about this, I think we need to keep in fact that there are other costs that are associated with that barrel of oil or that gallon of gasoline in addition to that $2 or that $50 that we're paying.
Not to mention environmental costs. Do you see the Green Way as a way that will work for the U.S., Colin?
I think absolutely the Green Way, and I think what your guests are talking about this morning, when they're saying aligning the goals and objectives of the industrial manufacturing sector and the economic sector with the green sector and the environmental sector, it's absolutely doable. And I think we need to, we're talking about bailing out the big three auto companies and so forth. I think we need to look at a new economy that is basically a different kind of economy. And in the automobile industry, we need to be talking about green automobiles, smaller vehicles. We need to be talking about new types of transportation modes that will be safer, reduce cost of property damage on the road because of so many accidents, and so on and so forth. So I think it's a whole new day, and I think the green sector has a very large key role to play in retooling the economic viability for this country.
Let's hope, and let's hope it'll work. Colin, thanks for your call. John Kerry, you're at Business Week. You hear Matthew Kahn saying business people may wonder what comes in the future. They need some certainty about this. In the business community, do you now feel a hunger for some new structure, clear structure, lasting structure to be built that will incentivize the green way? Are they on board for that long term?
Well, every industry has its own unique needs. Chemical guys want to make sure we have plenty of natural gas so those prices don't go up too much. The coal guys want to know what the price of fossil fuels will be to see if they can, what kind of plants they can build. So each industry has a whole set of things that it wants done. But what is common that we've been talking about is certainty. They want to know what the prices they want to will be. They want to know what the regulatory regimes will be so that they can plan ahead. And it makes a big difference in what they do. And it makes a big difference to what the America's energy whole economy will look like. And so it's an important time with a lot of important decisions to be made now.
Well, they are right in front of us. Josh Green, we hear that the big buzz is now not so much the web, but green out in your neck of the woods. Is that true?
Absolutely. We've got about a third of all venture capital going into clean technologies these days. I only hope that number increases.
Well, Barack Obama says, let's do it. We'll see what happens. Josh Green at Moore David Al Ventures in Menlo Park, California. Wonderful having you with us this hour. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Matthew Kahn at UCLA. Thank you, Professor Kahn, for your economic perspective.
Thank you, Tom.
John Kerry at Business Week Magazine. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.